Louisa lay rigid and wakeful on her bed. She knew he could hear any movement she made, and she did not want him to know that she was unable to sleep. She was racked by guilt and remorse. She felt a deep sense of obligation to Jim. She knew only too well what he had sacrificed for her. Added to this, she liked him. It was impossible not to. He was so outgoing and cheerful, so strong, dependable, and resourceful. She felt safe when he was near at hand. She liked the way he looked, big and strong, with an open, honest face. He could make her laugh. She smiled as she thought of the way he had reacted when she shot a hole through his hat. He had a quirky sense of humour that she was at last coming to understand. He could retell the day's events in a way that made her laugh with surprise, even though she had witnessed them. She felt that he was her friend when he called her hedgehog and teased her in that rude, almost incomprehensible English way. Even now that he was sulking, it was good to know that he was within call. Often in the night, when she heard strange wild sounds, the gibbering of hyena or the roaring of a pride of lions, she was mortally afraid. Then he would speak to her quietly through the wall of the tent. His voice reassured her, calmed her fears, and she could sleep again. Then there were the nightmares. Often she dreamed that she was at Huis Brabant again. She saw the tripod and the silk ropes, and in the candlelight the dark figure dressed in the costume of the executioner, the black gloves and the leather mask with the eye slits. When the nightmares came upon her, she was trapped in those dark fantasies and unable to escape until his voice woke her, rescued her from the terror. "Hedgehog, wake up, it's all right. It's only a dream. I'm here. I won't let anything happen to you." She always woke to a deep sense of gratitude. She liked him a little more each day, and she trusted him, but she could not let him touch her. And even the most casual contact, if he adjusted her stirrup leather and touched her ankle, if he handed her some ordinary object like a spoon or a coffee mug and their fingers brushed, she felt afraid and repelled. Strangely, from a distance, she found him attractive. When he rode beside her and she smelt his warm man smell and listened to his voice and his laughter, it made her happy. Once she had come upon Jim unexpectedly while he was washing in the river. He had still been wearing his breeches, but he had thrown his shirt and leather jacket on the bank. He was scooping handfuls of water and dashing them over his head. His back had been towards her, so he had not seen her. For a long moment before she turned away, she had stared at the smooth, unblemished skin of his bare back. It was in sharp contrast to his sun-browned arms. The muscles were strongly defined below the pale skin and changed shape as he lifted his arms. She had felt again that wicked stirring of her senses, that shortness of breath, the melting heaviness of her loins, and the unfocused but lascivious longing that Kern von Ritters had awakened in her before he plunged her into the horrors of his evil fantasy. "I don't ever want that again," she thought, as she lay in darkness. "I cannot let another man touch me, not even Jim. I want him to be my friend, but I don't want that. I should go into the church, a nunnery. That is the only escape for me." But there was no nunnery in the wilderness. And at last she slept.